Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Welcome to another episode of Talking Ed Season 2, presented by students of International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, Cohort 2. I am Sabrina, your host for the day. Today our topic is labor market and adult education, which will be presented by Yuna from South Korea, Mariana from Georgia, and me, Sabrina, from Bangladesh. Today we will explore various aspects of labor market and its relevance to adult education. Adult education has a significant influence on the labor market of a country. Many research showed that to have employment, education and relevant skills are necessary, which will have positive labor market outcomes for individuals. All these leads to adult learning to be important for policy agenda. These are the reasons that many states are preparing or amending their adult education policies according to the need of labor market. So without further ado, let's talk to Mari. Mari, do you think that adult education has any relation with labor market of a country?
Hello, everyone. Yes, definitely yes. The relation between labor market and adult education is quite tight. We can see that job market requirements has been changed significantly for the last few decades. And we see that degrees from higher education is no longer as relevant as it was before, because the working culture has also been changed. Now it's more project management focused working environment in many places, and people are tend to change the job quickly. There are a big field of freelancing works as well. So these changes in job market require new skills for employees, and it means that the adults after their higher education have to learn new skills in order to be competitive in a job market. And here is the space where we see the closest links between adult education and labor market. And the main aim of adult education is seen to increase the employability of individuals.
What do you think, Yuna? Do you agree with Mari?
Hello, everyone. Yes, I definitely agree with you, Mari. So I also would like to add that many studies already show that a sociocultural perspective to represent the knowledge from former education needs to be recontextualized between working life and professional practice. But before going into more detail, I'd like to hear from you, Sabrina, what is the difference between knowledge, skill, and competency?
Thank you for asking the question, Yuna. Actually, generally, we use these three terms interchangeably. The reason behind this is they are all must-haves in our career. Recruiters look for knowledge, skills, and competences during the hiring process. Knowledge is a theoretical or practical understanding of a subject. For example, an employee might have the knowledge of different models used in instructional design. Defining skill can be a bit tricky, and there are different kinds of measures that can be used. However, for me, the straightforward definition of skills would be the proficiencies developed through training or experience. Using the model example, the employee has demonstrated skills in applying the model when designing training programs. Skills are usually something that has been learned, so we can develop our skills not only through the transfer of knowledge but also by comprehending and understanding the application of the knowledge. Now, competency is the quality of being able to do something. There is a fine line between skills and competency. In continuation of the same example, I think of organization and prioritization as abilities that can help an employee to develop their instructional designing skills.
So thank you, Sabrina. So we're much more clear about knowledge, skill, and competency. Now move on to Mari. What skills should we learn? How the good worker of the 21st century looks like?
Well, that's a really good question and relevant, because job requirements, as I've already mentioned, has significantly changed. And they are expected to be flexible, capable of orienting themselves quickly within new contexts, and able to continually learn and develop throughout their professional careers. work in multidisciplinary context and process the ability to collaborate and communicate with others. That's one of the most important skills as well. And also the feature thing is that they have this constant willingness of development and ability to work in stressful environment. And we can see this requirement in many job applications as well. And they require you have to be able to work in a stressful environment.
Yes, Mari. And I think labor market policies and educational strategies, as well as organizational recruitment, training and competencies development policies, are generally based on a market-driven technical rational approach to matching supply and demand for labor market.
Yes, Sabrina. UNESCO is one of the leading organizations who focuses on lifelong learning. And UNESCO's decision to shift to lifelong learning is the response to the globalized open market, which created new job requirements for the people. In other words, this is an adaptation to the existing structures and system rather than fighting against it. What does this change exactly mean is that lifelong learning is over individual oriented and states' responsibilities of providing accessible education is now on individuals. They're told they should be responsible for their own learning. This is over individual oriented learning, and it's also excluding some moral aspects of education, such as the spirit of solidarity and sense of collectivity.
So what happens if individual is responsibility override the collectivity?
Well, I think sometimes these responsibilities on individuals are being justified by saying that people are lazy and that is why they do not have a job. But in reality, not everyone is capable to have the skills for getting the jobs, and even they have there will never be enough proper and worth jobs for everyone in this system. Therefore, it is important to problematize that not all adult learners have the same opportunities for education and learning. Individual employability includes nearly all aspects that are relevant to an individual's ability to obtain a job and perform the tasks associated with a job.
This shows that the link between education and economy is inevitable, and the capitalist need for employees are flexibility, mobility, job-related counseling, and basic job-related skills.
Yes, that's right. Sometimes there's too much pressure from society that you should be developing all the time and catch up fast-changing requirements of job market. I agree that lifelong development is important, but it's different when this pressure is coming from the institutions. In the case of European Union, which has adopted this concept as its master concept, using the term learning instead of education, also serves another purpose. Education is regarded within the EU as a matter of nation sovereignty. Terms such as learning and human resource development became the choice words in that circumstance. They need to have flexible workers' places, emphasize on learning and skills, upgrading being not a time-conditioned process but constant throughout life. Everything leads countries to engage in spending on education for a more educated, flexible and mobile workforce in order to attract and maintain investment as well as remain competitive more generally in the global economy.
But what about community organizations? Are they helping people in this process of transformation?
Well, a majority of them adopted already lifelong learning principles to their education indeed. Well, is their purpose of the start to these community organizations. So it means that they enable people to become more entrepreneur personally, socially, and economically, and less collective and dependent on the state. The debate on rights and responsibility is rationalized with autonomous choice and self-help being advocated for all. But the one most challenging result of this process is that maybe the space of reflection and also mental competencies are decreasing. And this is a gap that needs to be addressed by educators.
Talking Ed Season 2 presented by IMS Cohort 2. Today, Yuna, Mari and me, Sabrina, are discussing about adult education and labor market. Before the break, we were sharing about adult education and its relation to labor market and why UNESCO changed lifelong education into lifelong learning.
So, Sabrina, I'm very curious about that. As a developing country, what does Bangladesh do regarding labor market issue?
Acknowledging the fact that skills, knowledge and innovation are important driving forces of economic growth and social development in any country, and those countries with higher level of education and skills adjust more effectively to challenges and opportunities in the global economy, Bangladeshi government is currently working on skill development of the workforce of Bangladesh. The government also working towards creating skilled labor following the Skill Development Policy 2011. The government is leveraging the demographic dividend by empowering youth through meaningful skills most demanded by the market. Government of Bangladesh is providing many professional development programs and training through many projects. Along with that, they are creating many non-formal structures for vocational and technical training for employment possibilities.
So you're saying that now the government is focusing on more and more concerned about labor market and employability. Can you give us some more detail regarding what your government is really doing?
Yes, Yuna, our government is taking labor market and employability very seriously. To achieve the goal of decent work and economic growth, the increasing labor productivity, reducing the unemployment rate, especially for young people, and improving access to financial services and benefits are essential components. It is very difficult to give all the details in this limited time of our program. However, I would like to mention one example. In Bangladesh, remittance is increasing year after year and has become second largest sector of foreign exchange earnings next to ready-made garment sector. It has created a new dimension in the economic development of Bangladesh. It reduces unemployment and poverty. According to National Skill Development Policy of Bangladesh, the future growth of remittance from expatriates worker is dependent on improved skill development in Bangladesh. The government took an initiative where nationally recognized qualifications will be available to expatriate workers, mainly technical and vocational trainings. For that, the government is offering different skill development program by providing stipend, apprenticeship opportunities and many employment program in different sectors. To increase the number of qualified expatriates worker, government is trying to offer in a systematic way. Overseas employers and government will be made aware of the reform of skill training in Bangladesh so that overseas employers can more easily access the difference between skilled and less skilled worker, and so that the expatriates worker gain the recognition and remuneration they deserve in overseas market. This will not only help the workers but also help the nation by providing more remittance.
Wow, it's very interesting that Bangladesh government is trying to develop skills to get more remittance. Now we have another case to prepare the labor market on national level. Yuna, I know that you research on the Committee on Fourth Industrial Revolution in South Korea.
Yes, so since the inauguration of the new government of South Korea, President Moon pledged the government have been invested more in technologies linked to the fourth industrial revolution like IoT or Internet of Things and Big Data. So this committee as a presidential committee on the First Industrial Revolution focuses on the convergence of smart technologies, which have the potential to raise the country's competitiveness in new industries and create new jobs. Here is a video from World Economic Forum for the listeners who wants to know what First Industrial Revolution is.
In the next few years, I expect the digital transformation of life to bring huge changes. Everything from science to healthcare to sensors to robotics.
Whether it's information technology and the acceleration we see in artificial intelligence, you just look across the board and you can see a lot is happening.
It's really the notion of digital technology pervasively impacting every walk of life in every vertical industry in all parts of the globe.
So speed is mind-boggling. What I'm particularly concerned about it is how little the world is prepared for the fourth industrial revolution.
If we are not innovative, if we're not creative enough, it will be very difficult to survive in this century.
Countries in emerging markets should take the lead. Mobile platforms will define how fast the fourth industrial revolution will be embraced by the countries.
It's very difficult to try to bridge the gap between a borderless industrial revolution that's being governed by different policies and regulations in each territory and country.
We're always looking for new technology and how it makes the process more efficient, how it makes the quality higher. But one of the things that it's really creating is a need for those that have a technical background.
52% of the encounters with our primary care physicians were handled virtually. Just a massive change.
The technologies available today to scientists, to clinicians, and to everyday people will impact and change healthcare forever.
Humans and machines are assisting each other, augmenting each other with skills.
Humanity itself will be changed with this superintelligence, and we are at the doorstep of that era.
World Economic Forum is in the best position to meet a lot of these challenges that Fourth Industrial Revolution is going to bring.
The opening of the San Francisco Center for the Fourth Industrial Revolution really provides a useful platform to bring together the smartest brains who are right at the leading edge of this technology.
I deeply believe in this idea of cross-fertilization. Good ideas come less from inside brilliant people's heads and more from seeing patterns.
We have to think about things quite a bit differently. That's why I'm so excited about what's happening right here in San Francisco, to be able to have a multi-stakeholder dialogue around the Fourth Industrial Revolution.
My hope is that we have a robust discussion for how this can truly help our world solve some of the hard-pressed challenges that we have today.
The world has changed. We can never, ever go back to yesterday.
So it sounds training people to be familiar with smart technologies can allow to create new jobs. What does committee really do for people?
Well, briefly speaking, in the manufacturing sector, for example, it plans to expand the smart factories, support the development of industrial robots, and also accelerate the use of 3D printers in manufacturing. The committee also aims to provide higher quality service by incorporating artificial intelligence and robots in the medical field and build big data centers to help facilitate an environment where data can be readily exchanged and utilized.
Utilizing artificial intelligence and robots in the medical field sounds more significant than others. As far as I know, South Korea is also well known for mobile communication system, is it right? 5G above 4G.
Oh yes, you're right on. Yeah, another aim of the committee is to make Korea the world's first country to commercialize 5G internet connectivity, a necessity in the era of the Internet of Things where everything is connected to the web.
So can you tell me how the committee plan to go about it, and where does the committee have investment? Does it come from the talks?
Sure. To all of this, the committee says it has boosted R&D funding and pushed for deregulations so that companies engaged in new industries can freely test their innovative ideas, products, and services. The company is divided into technology, social innovation, and management teams.
It seems really interesting. Do you have any latest news on it?
Yes. As the committee convenes every 3 months since October of 2017, the committee has worked with 21 other ministries and private sector to come up with the detailed plans. Above all, I want to introduce two events they plan. One is called Hackathon. A hackathon is an event commonly held in the computer programming industry where a large number of people gather to collaboratively make a prototype service in a limited period of time. As the committee would like to take the role of listening to opposing ideas and drawing a constructive conclusion based on the social consensus, they propose to hold a hackathon-style debate. The other one is initiating smart city plan. So let's listen to the chair of the committee about smart city framework, a way of using information technology to improve the way cities are run.
The fourth industrial revolution has a huge effect socioeconomically. Smart city is a platform using related technologies and services. Today, we will deliberate on a smart city development plan that has been worked on by government officials and private sector experts since last November.
So the smart city platform combines infrastructure, technology, and services. It uses technology like the Internet of Things and big data to share information on things like traffic, transportation, or the weather, which improves efficiency by saving energy and labor costs. So one of the new cities is in an area in Busan, and another city is in the country's administrative hub of Sejong. They will become test beds for cutting-edge technologies like artificial intelligence, smart farms, and driverless cars.
So, for instance, the government envisions a city connected by the Internet of Things, electric vehicles powered by renewables, and deliveries by drone, all of which would help increase efficiency. Is that right?
Yes, perfectly right. So, as for existing so-called old cities, the government plans to save energy by using renewable sources as a form of urban power generation. The broad picture has been unveiled, but it's still in its initial stage. In terms of a labor market, I would like to clarify this plan can create new jobs. With utilizing existing manufacturing industries, the government kept consider how to carry out the plan in a sustainable way. Well, absolutely, the details need to be fleshed out on things like the government's budget, cooperation between the private and public sectors, and a system for evaluating performance. We talked Korea and Bangladesh covering different labor policy on the national level. So here's a paradox you don't hear much about. Despite a country of creating machines to do our work for us, the proportion of others in the U.S. with the job has constantly gone up for the past 125 years. Why hasn't human labor become redundant and our skills obsolete? So in this talk about the future of work, economist David Autor addresses the question of why there are still so many jobs and comes up with a surprising half answer.
Does that mean there's nothing to worry about? Automation and employment, robots and jobs, it'll all take care of itself? No, that is not my argument. Automation creates wealth by allowing us to do more work in less time. There's no economic law that says that we will use that wealth well, and that is worth worrying about. Consider two countries, Norway and Saudi Arabia, both oil-rich nations. It's like they have money spurting out of a hole in the ground. But they haven't used that wealth equally well to foster human prosperity, human prospering. Norway is a thriving democracy. By and large, its citizens work and play well together. It's typically numbered between first and fourth in rankings of national happiness. Saudi Arabia is an absolute monarchy in which many citizens lack a path for personal advancement. It's typically ranked 35th among nations in happiness, which is low for such a wealthy nation. Just by way of comparison, the U.S. is typically ranked around 12th or 13th. The difference between these two countries is not their wealth and it's not their technology, it's their institutions. Norway has invested to build a society with opportunity and economic mobility. Saudi Arabia has raised living standards while frustrating many other human strivings. Two countries, both wealthy, not equally well off.
Wow, that's really interesting. Thank you, Yuna, for sharing your research on South Korea.
Talking at Season 2 presented by IMAS Cohort 2. Today, Yuna, Mari and me, Sabrina, are discussing about adult education and labor market. Before the break, we were sharing about what Bangladesh government is doing for labor market and a case study of fourth industrial revolution from South Korea.
So today we talked about adult education for labor market by dividing two parts. One, that we talked how could we figure out the relevance of adult education with the labor market and how UNESCO interpret the labor situation in terms of life and learning over the globe. It is definitely imperative to continue to discuss skills, knowledge, and its competency for future economic ecology. Also, through the case studies, the remittance policy in Bangladesh contributes to flexibility in its labor market, was introduced from Sabrina. In case of Korea, it was interesting to see how a fast-growing country's government arrange for the future labor market in terms of preparation for the first industrial revolution. So in the end, societies are characterized by providing significant resources to educate people so that the social division of labor can be reproduced, renewed, and also dynamically changed.
Thank you, Yuna and Mari, for sharing and discussing your personal experience and thoughts with regards to adult education and labor market. Dear listeners, this is it for today's show. Hopefully you liked today's discussion and will tune in to listen to our next show. Thanks very much to our technician, Charles. With this, me, Sabrina, Mari and Yuna saying our goodbye for the day, and grazie Hafna for listening to us.